Hey everyone, welcome to the Stories of Language Learners. I'm your host, Charles. Today we have a very special guest. Some of you may have heard of him. He's a podcaster, English teacher, and comedian. His name is Luke Thompson. He's the host of Luke's English Podcast, which is an amazing podcast for English learners. I love Luke's English Podcast. I've been listening to it for a while, and I highly recommend you guys to check it out. I reached out to Luke and I invited him to be on the podcast, and he kindly agreed. I'm so thrilled that I got the amazing opportunity to chat with Luke and to record this conversation. Here are some of the things we talk about in this episode: why you shouldn't be ashamed of your English, the importance of finding your way to enjoy learning, why you don't need to live abroad in order to learn a new language. Luke shared his experience learning French, the story behind Luke's English Podcast, the importance of finding a partner or an English teacher to practice English, the benefits of listening to podcasts. I had a blast talking with Luke, and I'm pretty sure that you guys are gonna love this episode. Before getting to the interview with Luke, let's hear a message from another listener of the podcast. As some of you may know, on season 4, I launched a new segment on the show. This segment is for you, the listener. If you would like to participate in the podcast, this space is for you. I want you guys to share your voice and your message. So, if you are interested in participating, feel free to send me a message on social media, okay? Today's listener is Grace. I had the pleasure to meet Grace in some of our online meetings, and I'm so happy that she's participating in this segment. I love the fact that I can connect with you guys through our encounters. I always have so much fun talking with you. Guys, I don't know how many of you know this, but every month I organize online meetings for us to meet and have fun while practicing English. If you haven't participated yet, I really encourage you to join us. Now, let's hear a message from Grace. Grace, thank you so much for participating on the podcast and for being a listener. I really appreciate it.
Hi Charles, thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it. So let me introduce myself first. I'm Grace. I'm from Indonesia. I have been listening to Stories of Language Learners podcast since last August in 2020. I found this podcast through my Instagram recommendation because I followed so many English learning accounts. So Stories of Language Learners account was one of it in my recommendation. I really enjoy listening to this podcast because I like the questions that Charles always asked to the guests. They were simple questions, but sharp questions that I realized I also questioning about. And Charles always make highlights about the important informations by the end of each episode that would help me to recall again about what I was just listening to. And I also like that Charles had many non-native speakers guests that I think I can learn more from their learning journey, their experiences, their challenges that they have been through and how they cope with it. So I think their informations would be more applicable for me since I also learning English as my second language. My favorite episode was with Samuel from Brazil. I was amazed by his journey of learning English with very limited resources and how he uses every opportunity to get better in English. I learned a lot from that episode. If I can share my advice for the learners out there is to practice as much as you can using any opportunities, like Samuel said. I mean, we should immerse ourselves with this language through any kind of way, like through messages or record ourselves speaking or singing or change change the language in any device we use to English, or surfing in social media using English, or even writing our schedule or notes in English. I think that's all. Thanks again, Charles. I hope you have a great day.
Learning a new language changed my life, and I'm sure that it can change yours too. One of my main goals with this podcast is to share amazing and inspiring stories from other learners, so we all can stay motivated and get inspired over and over again. I hear on a daily basis how much you guys love and appreciate the show. So now you can support the work I've been doing with this podcast by becoming a member on Patreon. All the financial support there will go to the podcast and our community. Also, by becoming a member on Patreon, you'll get extra content. The link to join us on Patreon is in the show notes. Thank you guys so much. I really appreciate your support. Hey everyone, welcome to the Stories of Language Learners. Today, I'm so honored to have on the show Luke Thompson. Hello Luke, thank you so much for being here. How are you?
I'm fine. Hi there, nice to see you in space. You appear to be in space. I'm looking at you on Zoom, and your Zoom background is outer space, so you're just somewhere on the International Space Station, maybe, something like that.
Yes, this is my superpower that I can use through Zoom. And yeah. In the first episodes that I recorded, I didn't know that I could use this tool to put some background. But then I remember that I interviewed a guest who had like a background really nice, and I asked her, oh, how can I do that? Because my background, it's like a green wall that sometimes can hurt your eyes by staring at it. So I started to put some background. This is my superpower using Zoom.
It works really well. It looks really good.
Awesome. Okay, so in case someone doesn't know who you are, could you please introduce yourself?
Yes. Okay. So my name's Luke Thompson, and I'm from England, and I'm an English teacher and a podcaster, and I'm a stand-up comedian as well, but I don't do much stand-up comedy at the moment because all the comedy clubs are all closed. So I'm not really a comedian now. But anyway, podcaster first, and then English teacher second these days, because I spend more time making podcasts than I do actually doing English lessons. The podcast is called Luke's English Podcast, and it's for learners of English all around the world. And I've been doing it for 12 years, over 12 years now. 2009 is when I started. So 12 years of podcasting and 20 years of English teaching, and having a great time.
I have a question here about your podcast because I'm really curious, but you've been doing this since 2009. This is remarkable. And I was reading your website yesterday, and then I saw that you have more than 700 episodes, which is incredible. And also more than 70 million downloads. This is incredible. And also you won 5 awards.
Yes, that's right.
This is really cool.
Yeah. Macmillan I Love English Dictionary Awards, which is where people voted for their favorite websites and blogs and things, and some other things. Yeah, you can read about it all on my website. Oh yeah, I'm amazed too. It's fantastic. I mean, obviously I have a great privilege, which is that around the world there are many millions of people who want to learn English. You know, the privilege I have is that my native language is in great demand, and so there is quite a lot of there's quite a large audience out there in the world which we can access, of course, now with the internet. I say now with the internet, it's not as if the internet's new, but when I first started teaching English, these things weren't possible. But then sort of 10 years after I started teaching, podcasting was much more well established, and then YouTube and stuff, and sort of the whole world has been opened up to English teachers like me in ways that, you know, weren't possible before, and with a lot of sort of incredible results. Like there's, you know, I get lots of people around the world listening to my podcast, but you can just see English teachers on YouTube and stuff. You're getting millions and millions of subscribers and stuff. It really is incredible. So I feel lucky. I feel lucky that people actually want to learn my language.
Okay, so the next question is, I would love to hear a background story about your podcast. When did you start podcasting? Did you imagine that your podcast would turn into something like this? like 12 years ago.
I sort of do this for a job now because I've got, you know, my premium subscription and that brings some money into the home and stuff like that. And it means I can continue doing my podcast as my job. And I don't know if I ever imagined it. I always thought it was possible, but certainly in the first few years, it was just like this far off idea of like, oh, imagine if I could just do this. So I don't know if I imagined it or hoped for it or just dreamed about it or what, but yeah, it is a reality now, which is just the best thing. I'm so happy to be able to continue podcasting and sort of devote a lot of time to doing it. It's wonderful. I started in 2009 and, you know, similar to you, you were talking to me earlier about how you were always, you know, a big fan of podcasts, or you have been for a few years before you started your podcast. Same thing for me. I was always really into listening to podcasts. And so from the early days of podcasting, 2005, 2004, when I, weirdly enough, got my first computer. So even though I'm probably older than you, but I got my first computer with an internet connection then. And then I discovered podcasts, which had just started. And I think some of the first ones I listened to were Ricky Gervais, the Ricky Gervais podcast, and a few others. Anyway, I was a big fan of podcasts and listened to a lot of them, loved the whole idea of them. I just thought they were brilliant. And I worked at a language school in London and they asked me to do some research into podcasts. This is 2008, probably. And the idea at the time was that we would somehow use podcasts in the classroom, that students would be somehow making podcasts as part of their English lessons, which is an idea that in the end didn't work. That's not how podcasts have been used in English language teaching. So that was, you know, basically my boss was like, there's a thing called podcasting. Can you look into it? And so I kind of checked it out. And I also suggested making a podcast for the school. And I made a podcast episode for my school. And I played the pilot episode to the big boss of the school. And he was like, no, I'm not sure I like this. And he asked me to make lots of changes to it. You know, I had my own approach. I wanted it to have a certain kind of natural feel. And he was like, I'm not sure I like the style of it. And he said, can you make some changes? And I actually just thought, you know what? Nah, it's all right. Never mind. Forget about it. I'd rather do it my way. And so I chose to start my own podcast kind of on my own terms at home in my free time. And the school was okay with the idea and they were always very supportive of my podcast. But so anyway, that was one thing. And it was possible. I had a laptop. I knew how to create. There were a few different websites or services that would host podcasts. I had GarageBand on my Apple Mac and I can actually record. I used to use the inbuilt microphone on my computer with GarageBand and just talk into the computer. These days, the idea of doing that is crazy. We have to use good microphones and stuff. But so it was possible. And then I knew also that there would be an audience of learners of English in the world. And I felt that I had things to say to them that would be useful to them as an English teacher. You know, I just thought, there's an audience and I feel like I could say things to them. And another reason why I did it is teacher talking time. So I don't know if you're familiar with this concept, but for English teachers, when we do our English training courses and stuff like that, teacher talking time is something that we are supposed to keep to a minimum because, you know, classes in classrooms are supposed to be student focused. It's learner focused. And it's no good if the teacher is just doing all the talking and everyone's just sitting there listening. It's just terrible. Those are not the right conditions. It's good for the teacher to talk to the students a bit, obviously, for obvious reasons, and to present language and stuff. But the students should be doing most of the talking. It should be their space. So teacher talking time is always something I've tried to reduce and keep to a minimum. So in classes, I would often have to hold my tongue, you know, like I must not talk too much. But I felt like I had loads of things to say. I found English lessons so inspiring. The things that I was asking my students to do, things that came up in course books and things, speaking activities. I always felt like I've got things to say on this subject. And I was always desperate to say them, but I felt like I couldn't really dominate the situation by talking too much. But then having a podcast was great because I could hold my tongue in my classes and just focus on helping the students. And then all the things I wanted to say, I could just put them into episodes of my podcast. So it was a really great thing where it really helped my teaching because it meant that I could just focus on the students and I wasn't using my classes as a platform and I could just throw everything into my podcasts, all the ideas I had that I didn't get the chance to express in the lessons. So yeah, so there you go. That's kind of how I started. There you go. Is that what you were looking for?
Yes. Thank you so much for sharing. This is so amazing because I've talked with some English teachers and some of them, they were really interested in starting a podcast. And I said to them, why not? Because you can do basically classes in audio format and then you can send them to your students. And also you are going to help other learners out there who are also trying to learn this language. So this is awesome. So basically the whole idea behind your podcast was to help your students and then turned into full-time job, right?
It was both. It was to help the students, but also to kind of help myself in a way. I think that's maybe how I've managed to keep doing it all these years, because I feel like it's mutually beneficial. Obviously, it's good for the students because I'm helping with their English, but it is good for me too, because it gives me a platform. And I'm not just an English teacher. I'm, you know, as you know, I'm a comedian as well. And comedians like to have an audience. I always wanted to like be a radio DJ or something. I wanted to have my own, you know, you're listening to Luke's radio show. I wanted to have that kind of thing. I don't know, just a sort of a dream. But so having the podcast meant that it also gave me a platform, to be honest. You know, it meant that I could, it was a space where I could be creative and a space where I could try out ideas and sort of try and be funny and just stuff like that. So my podcast has always been a mix of like English language teaching and then just, I don't know, whatever comes into my head is like comedy ideas or things I'm thinking about and stuff like that. And I hope this is what people like about it, that it's like a, you know, a combination of English teaching, but also something personal. I hope that, I expect that, I don't know, people tell me that this is what they like about it, that there's a personal touch to it. And I think that probably helps with language learning, you know, if it feels personal and engaging.
Yes, the episodes that I listen from your podcast, I really love them because you are funny. And this is something that I love about learning any skill, is that you can learn anything in a fun way. Learning a new skill or English doesn't need to be boring, right?
Yeah, there's no reason why it can't be fun, why you can't sort of incorporate comedy into most things that you do. I don't see why we can't do that. That's, you know, as a teacher in classrooms, I always found it, I don't know if it's just me or if it's because I'm English and we have a weird sense of humor or whatever, but I just found it terribly uncomfortable and awkward if we were all being serious. And I always felt compelled to try to do something funny or say something funny. Half the time, I think my learners don't know. They're like, don't realize that I'm saying something just to make them laugh sometimes, or just to kind of, hey, let's all enjoy this. But I couldn't live without it. I think kind of a humorous feeling all the time. Can't bear being serious all the time. Ugh.
Yes, and I told you before I started recording my experience learning English, and I felt like I wasn't motivated because my class was so boring and was so traditional in a way that we would just use books and do exercise and that kind of stuff. And learning a new language doesn't need to be boring. And I am a podcast lover. I consume a lot of podcasts. And yes, you combine like teaching English and in a fun way, which is really engaging. And this kept the attention of the listeners, which is really awesome. And I listened to some of the interviews you did with Paul Taylor, and you guys are hysterical together. It's so much fun to listen to you guys speaking, and you guys make some impressions, and you are really good at imitating some accents, which is really incredible. I highly recommend you guys who are listening to us to check out some of the interviews from Luke with Paul Taylor, because they are really hysterical and really fun to listen to. I loved that episode. Okay, so as you mentioned, you started this project to help your students and then to have a platform for yourself, and then you ended up doing this until you are still doing it until today. And I can personally say that having a podcast brought to me so many amazing and incredible opportunities. As I mentioned before, I had the chance to connect with so many amazing people from all around the world that otherwise I wouldn't get the chance to talk with. And I also told you that English is this language that connects people, which is a beautiful thing. You can meet people from any background, from any other culture, and which is fascinating. And And also, I started this podcast as a project to improve my English. And I confess that I thought to myself, I don't know if someone's gonna listen to me speaking in English. But turns out that I'm still doing it. Like, I'm recording season 4, and sometimes I can't believe that I'm doing this because it's a lot of work behind the scenes, as you know. And I have a full-time job, but you know what? I love doing it, and I hope that I can continue doing it. So yeah, podcasting is powerful. So if you guys, I don't know, if you want to improve your English, you can do like me. I improved my English so much by doing podcasts, and my speech, my pronunciation, my interviewing skills, and I'm still learning and each day, and I'm so grateful for that. And podcasting is something that is growing so fast nowadays. This is a kind of media that I believe that it will keep growing because people are busier and busier, so we usually don't have too much time. And podcast is easy to consume. You can multitask while consuming a podcast, which is awesome. And there is a guy that I really like. He's a great influencer in the podcasting space, Pat Flynn, and he mentioned that people can use podcasting to grow their business or to build a brand, sell their services. And it's a space that you can have a lot of opportunities, because if we compare with YouTube has 34 million of channels, and podcast, it's almost 2 million, I guess. So there's not too many podcasts out there.
Yeah, it's a lot though. It's still a lot.
Yeah,
a lot of podcasts. Uh-huh. But the thing is, it is a bit different because the user experience is different. So with YouTube, you have to be on YouTube. I mean, as a viewer, you know, you've just got to be on YouTube. And I don't know if you use YouTube a lot. I do. And I find I'll just go on YouTube and I'll just be browsing through the videos that YouTube suggests to me, you know, and I'm not so much watching someone's channel as just on YouTube. You know what I mean? So YouTube is what has my attention rather than specifically those episodes or podcasts. But when I'm listening to podcasts, I'm not just on my podcast app just browsing. I find a podcast episode and I press play, and I'll normally have my headphones in, and then I'll be out around and about doing things. You know, I'll be cleaning up the kitchen or whatever it is, walking, you know, coming back from dropping off my daughter at school or doing the supermarket shopping, and I'm listening to a podcast, and that has my attention. So I think the medium of podcast, I do prefer it, and I think it is different to YouTube, because on YouTube, people, I mean, as I have a YouTube channel and I see my data and it shows me how many minutes average people watch my videos, and the average, I think it's probably quite typical of YouTube. I expect some channels get a lot more, well, grab your attention a lot more. But anyway, for mine, it's like 10 minutes to 12 minutes. And that's how long people tend to watch on average. Some people will be more, some people will be less, but 10 to 12 minutes. So it's not that long. I think that I bet that my podcast on average has longer, you know, that people listen longer. So anyway, I find that YouTube people, when they're on it, they get distracted more easily. They focus on the visuals more. And with the podcasts, people are more likely to listen to you for longer periods of time and just focus on your voice and just focus on what you're saying. And so therefore, I actually prefer it as a medium for that reason.
Awesome. Okay, so I told you before that I wish that I could start to listen to podcasts early in my life, because I started to listen to podcasts in 2018. And I realized that I'm an audio learner, because I learned a lot through audio. And I learned so many new skills by just listening to podcasts. And then when I realized that I needed to put the content on my podcast out there, guess what I did? I started to learn a little bit about digital marketing to be able to promote the episodes, because I knew that I would spend a lot of time, a lot of work, and I knew that the conversations that I had, they were really precious and really helpful for learners out there. So I couldn't just stay put and wait for people to find it. So I had to find some ways to promote, and I ended up learning so many things. And now I use a lot of social media platforms to put the content out there. And at the end of the season 3 of the podcast, I was watching some of the statistics.
hard work.
From my podcast, and I saw that people from 100 different countries listen to my podcast, which is insane. I never expect that, because I thought to myself, no one's gonna listen to it. But this is awesome, because, and this goes back to what you said, that English, it's nowadays people are interested because this is the global language, so there is an audience for that, because this language is so important nowadays. It can open so many doors, so people are really interested in learning this language, which is amazing.
Mm-hmm. absolutely right.
Awesome. Yeah, let's go to the next question. Since part of the show is about language learning, and I know that you've been learning French, could you please share with us a little bit of your experience learning French?
So any sort of listeners to my podcast or long-term listeners will have heard me talk about my French, and I am, what's the word, how shall I describe my relationship with my learning of French? I kind of beat myself up about it quite a lot, right? You know, I'm in a fairly negative cycle with learning of French, not because I'm struggling really hard, training really hard, applying myself to it and not getting results. It's not because of that. It's kind of because I feel bad because I'm not applying myself to it in the way that I should. And especially as I am a language teaching professional of 20 years who has said many bits of advice. I know all of the advice about language learning, but I don't apply it to myself. This is the embarrassing thing. So I have to say, I feel a bit ashamed, but feeling ashamed about your language learning is never a good place to be. You know, you've got the positive cycle and a negative spiral, right? So a negative spiral is when one negative thought leads to another, and that makes you feel bad, and then you don't do practice, and then, you know, it spirals from there in a negative way. You've talked about your learning experiences, and it's definitely a positive cycle, because you've talked about how you studied grammar and stuff in classes which you found a bit boring, but then you started trying different things, you started to immerse yourself in English, and this kind of created a positive spiral, and then you just thought, maybe I can start my own podcast, I'll just see what happens, and it went well, and you know, positive momentum, you know, carried you, and it snowballs into something really big and positive. Similarly, negatively, things can kind of snowball in the wrong direction too. So kind of my story is a bit like that I'm not in the best place for my French. But anyway, let me tell you about my learning of French. So yes, I live in Paris, right? I'm married to a French girl. And so I've been living here for about 9 years now. But my first experience, I'll get to my level of French and stuff. My first experience with French was probably when I was about 5 years old. So obviously I'm from England. England and France are neighboring countries. And my family, we used to go on holiday in the south of France when I was a child. We used to regularly go to the south of France. Beautiful part of the world. A fantastic place to go on holiday. Lovely memories of being there. And so when I was about 5 years old or so, my mum and dad in the mornings on holiday would send me to go down the road. It was literally just a few doors down to the boulangerie, the bakery, to pick up the bread for the morning for our breakfast. And they taught me a phrase, and it was 4 croissants and 2 baguettes, please, which in French is basically 4 croissants et 2 baguettes, s'il vous plaît. Okay. And so this was the phrase that I learned. And that was literally it. That was like the only French I had then. And so I would go down to the boulangerie, and I'd queue up, and I had the money in my hands, and I'd get to the counter, and I'd say, you know, 4 croissants et 2 baguettes, s'il vous plaît. And if they said anything else to me, I was completely unable to answer. And I would just repeat, you know, the thing that I had learned. So if they said anything else, like, oh, you know, tu as un petit accent, you know, tu viens d'où, you know, like, oh, you have a little accent, where do you come from? I would just have to say, 4 croissants et 2 baguettes, s'il vous plaît. You know, that's the only thing I could do. So anyway, then at school, like most English kids, certainly when I was growing up, when you get to secondary school, you learn another language. I think it's very sad and tragic, but I think it's not compulsory now, which is a real pity. Anyway, when I was at school, it was compulsory to learn a second language. And for most of us, it was French. So I learned some French at school in English lessons from the age of 11 to 16. But those classes were mostly, not that successful, quite bad, really. Mostly because I probably wasn't a great student. You know, I was average, really. And I probably didn't do my homework and listen properly in lessons and stuff. But also because learning a language in a classroom like that as a child is never really the best situation in which you can learn a language. I mean, it's difficult, you know, of course. You can't send all children off off to another country to, you know, to immerse themselves in that language. So, you know, the classroom is like often the only way it can be done. But anyway, you know, the conditions are never really that great. Other kids in the class were usually completely uninterested. The teacher was often stressed out trying to discipline everyone. And so, you know, we didn't always actually do much French speaking or learning. We spent a lot of time playing around in the language lab. So in our school, we had a language lab, which was basically, I mean, I was at school in the 80s and 90s. So the language lab in our school was like a room, and all around the room, there were these cassette players with headphones and microphones, and then dividers dividing each one. And all the kids would sit down at their own cassette player. And the whole thing was connected to a big control desk. And the teacher would sit behind the control desk, and you'd all put your headphones on, and you're supposed to kind of do exercises, listen and repeat stuff, listening to cassettes. But of course, as kids, we would all be sort of playing around with the machines and like kind of hacking. I mean, it was analog cassettes, but we would find ways to listen to each other. And we were like, you know, there were certain buttons you could press to connect to other people. And we would be like sending stupid messages to each other, or we would be recording silly noises on the cassettes, you know, messing around, not doing the work we were supposed to do. And also we would spend a lot of time laughing at French words that sounded funny to us. Like the word for swimming pool in French is piscine, which, you know, sounds like pissing, doesn't it? If you're a 12-year-old child, this is the most hilarious thing, that, you know, you're like, je vais aller à la piscine. We would all be laughing because we were 12. And so we didn't learn a lot of French, but I didn't actually do too badly. Somehow the teacher did a good job and inspired us and stuff. And I ended up with a B at GCSE level. That's the exams you take when you're 16. B, not terrible, not a complete failure, slightly above average. Anyway, it's not saying much. It wasn't very good. That's when I was 16 years old. I stopped French classes, you know, when I went off to college. So I didn't use French at all in those 16 years, just none. It was all gone from my life. And then 16 years later, I met a French girl and we got into a long distance relationship. I met her in London, and then, but she had to go back to Paris. Anyway, I got a French girlfriend. And so that involved frequent trips to Paris and going to Paris. And obviously, you know, they speak French in Paris. So I had to speak French a little bit. The girlfriend, she's now my wife, by the way, she spoke really good English. So, you know, it's a bit of a tricky one. It wasn't like, for some people, the language of the relationship, you know, if she hadn't spoken English, you know, if it had just been in French, then obviously my French would have improved a lot more, but we speak English a lot. Anyway, I moved to Paris then a couple of years after I met my girlfriend, and I've been here for 9 years. And you would assume, right, that because I'm immersed in French and that my French, you know, that I live in Paris, that my French must be proficient now. But I'm not really immersed in French, even though I live here, and my French is not proficient. So, I mean, you know, there's a myth that just going to live in the country where the language is spoken will result automatically in excellent learning of that language. But it is a myth, because there are still certain steps you have to take. Maybe I'm a victim of English in the sense, you know, I'm lucky to have English as my first language, but unlucky too, because everyone speaks English and lots of people want to speak English to me, and I can continue to work in English. So this is at this point, Chalice, I need to say that, you know, the old joke that I always say, which is my French is not that great, but my excuses are improving every day. All right. So I'm very fluent in excuses. So my French, okay. So my French is, it's actually good enough to apply for citizenship. So it's like, you need a B1 minimum B1 level to be given a French passport. And I took the test a couple of years ago and I got B1. So it's at least B1, probably on a good day, it's better than that. On a worse day, maybe I'm just, you know, like kind of monosyllabic, kind of just reduced to grunting noises and hand gestures. But, you know, average is probably B1. Any kind of pressure in the situation will destroy me and my French crumbles. I need quite a lot of patience and support from the person talking to me. So in the right conditions with the right person, my French is, you know, like I can have a conversation, but it's not great really. Here are the excuses. Do you want the excuses?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Okay. Well, you can, okay.
Okay. I think there was an episode of us. I don't remember which episode it was, but you talked a little bit about that you had more excuses than reasons to really get fluent. But I have to say that it's amazing. The simple fact that you are willing to learn or to just try to speak another language besides your mother tongue, it is a huge accomplishment, right?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I've weirdly, as an English teacher, maybe as a language teacher, I am quite strict on myself because I don't know what it is. I feel like I give myself quite a hard time about it. I just feel like I don't deserve to feel good about it. It's weird, isn't it? So you're there going, it's an amazing accomplishment. It's brilliant. And then my first thought is like, no, it's not, because I don't really make much effort. And all I do is step outside and I'm forced to speak French. It's not like most of the time when I have an option, right? Mm-hmm. If I've got like an hour free, I've got a list of things in my head of like, oh, I could do this. Often I will reach for the guitar and practice playing the guitar, or I will, you know, I will reach for a book in English, or it's like often things I choose to do with my free time are not to focus on working on my French, or I'll work on my podcast stuff, or I'll do this, all these other things. And the practicing and working on my French is quite far down the list. This is why I feel bad, because I feel sort of like it's unfair and rude of me to live in this country and not make more of an effort.
I think this is a natural human feeling, because I can say also that I started this podcast apologizing and say, oh guys, I'm so sorry, I'm not fluent. I'm doing this to improve my speaking skills and my English in general. And sometimes it's so hard for me to say, oh, I'm fluent. But you know what? I started to slowly embrace the fact that I'm kind of fluent, because a lot of guests in the past said to me, oh, you are fluent, your English is pretty good. And it's so hard for me to believe that. I don't know why.
Sorry, I was going to say, I think you are right. I think that there comes a point in language learning where you have to make a mental shift, and you have to then decide, okay, I'm okay, and I'm not going to feel bad about this, you know, or you're going to think to yourself, you just, as you said, embrace your learning of the language and decide, right, I'm in now, and I'm not going to make excuses for mistakes I make or whatever. It's fine, you know, I'm fine. And then you can start feeling good about your English or French or whatever it is. You can feel good about it. And that's a really important step, because that's when you get into the positive cycle. So, you know, thank you for saying nice things to me about, well, you know, you haven't really heard my French, but still, I appreciate being given a little push in a more positive direction. I think it's a valuable, worthwhile thing. I could tell you about some things I do. We get a bit more positive, mm-hmm. Sort of spin things into a more positive direction. So I do, you know, do some things, listening to French all the time. Obviously, I spend a lot of time listening to French, watching TV, listening to the radio sometimes, and stuff like that, and noticing things, listening to my wife have conversations, which is always interesting. I notice things in that. Reading. One of the things I love doing to work on my French that makes me feel really good is reading, and not just reading books, but reading graphic novels or comic books. I absolutely love this. This is one of my favorite things. And there's a series in French called L'Arabe du Futur, the Arab of the Future. It's about a French boy who's got a Syrian father. His father's from Syria, his mum's French, and he kind of spends time living in Syria and in Libya and in France. And it's a very funny story about his upbringing and his childhood in these different situations, and it's all in French, and I absolutely love that. And have other books by this author, Riyad Satouf, and other graphic novels in French. I think graphic novels in French are my favorite thing to do in French. I just absolutely love it, because, you know, there's a bit of visual support with the pictures, and they're funny, and also the characters speak in direct speech, and so it's like literally how people actually speak in French, rather than if you're reading a book, books are written in a certain literary style. There is dialogue in books often, but still it's not the same as just seeing the characters with speech bubbles, with the words written out in a very natural way. I really think that graphic novels are great. They're just a bit expensive. You can read them really quickly and then you have to get a new one. Speaking to my barber, when I get my hair cut, the guy who cuts my hair is really great, and we chat in French and English. Often I will chat to him in French and he chats to me in English. So when I leave the hair place, I come out with fresh haircut and I feel better about my French. So that's good. Some situations I find are less useful for me, and it's situations in which I feel there's some pressure. So when I am, I don't don't know, like when I'm talking to bank managers, talking to like important meetings, and also situations where like a dinner party, you know, I've gone to a dinner party with my wife or something and the conversation's flying around in French at high speed. And I feel very self-conscious in those moments because I feel like if I try and speak French that I'm going to make a fool of myself. I mean, my wife's very nice and she always says, no, don't worry. Everyone finds it adorable. But I always feel very self-conscious in those situations. I think that's a kind of a difficult situation to learn French in, especially if I'm trying to, you know, I want my wife to like me. Obviously, I don't want her to feel like she's married to Mr. Bean or something, which is how I feel when I speak French. So I would say, you know, it's, if we're thinking of advice for learners of English or learners of languages, you know, it's a good idea to find someone to practice with who is a sort of neutral person in your life. I mean, you know, an English teacher, what a surprise. But it's still worth remembering that finding a neutral person, so someone who is like not sort of connected to you personally, not someone where if you make mistakes, it doesn't matter. You know what I mean? Where you don't really care what that person thinks of you, a good language partner, a teacher, a listener. And that's really important, just a sense of a non-judgmental situation. And also I listened to a few podcasts in French, which have definitely helped. So there's one called Française Authentique and another one called Inner French and one called French Voices. And I listen to them from time to time. And that's great. And so conclusions, immersion in a language is only good if you're really engaging with the language and you're actually using it daily. You don't actually need to be physically located in the place. You can immerse yourself in another language just like you have in English. Language practice has to be enjoyable or it just won't really happen. There's no point banging your head against a wall doing something you don't like. Instead, just replace it with another kind of language practice. And there's no magic formula. It's all just a question of spending time with the language and trying to just, you know, maintain a positive relationship with it, I would say. Yeah.
Yes, I love that. Thanks so much for sharing. And sometimes I think this is like it's like a misconception when people believe that, oh, I need to live abroad in order to learn a new language. And I talked with some people who, for example, are living in the US and they can't talk in English. They have some insecurities to speak and they have the opportunity, but sometimes it's hard to step out of our comfort zone. But nowadays we have the internet, we have so many resources that we can connect and communicate with people out there to be able to practice a new language that we are learning.
We need to be honest with ourselves as well. Often people will say, I can only learn English in this situation, or I need this situation, or, you know, I can't learn English because, you know, these are all basically excuses. And, you know, like saying I can only learn English if I'm in another country, you know, and then they have no intention of actually going to that country or doing the thing. That's basically just them saying, well, my responsibility for learning English is out of my hands because I can't do it here. I have to be over there to do it. You know, all of those things are kind of excuses, really. And, you know, the English is there. You just need to, you know, basically make that mental step and just kind of be like, right, I'm committed, I'm in, I'm doing it. And then the rest of it is just time and practice after that.
Yeah, exactly. Because I never went abroad outside of Brazil, yeah, and I am able to speak in English. So I'm proof that you can do it. You don't have to live abroad to learn language.
Definitely. Yeah. It's if you want it, if you're mentally prepared for it, yeah, you can do anything.
Awesome. So guys, I prepared so many questions and so many things and we won't have time to do this, but I'm going to skip some questions and then we can do the rapid fire, super rapid fire, and then we can finish the conversation. Okay, so the last question is, what is the best advice you could give to someone who is learning English? It can be more than one.
Best advice for someone learning English. So, listen to Luke's English podcast, of course.
Yes.
I don't know, I could go on about that for ages. Best advice for someone learning English, I would say just, you know, it's okay to enjoy it, basically. Try and see it as something fun. Find your own way to enjoy learning English. If the way that you've been trying is just not making you happy, find another way. But whatever you do, take it, whatever road you take, that road, the destination should be English, but there are many different roads into it. It doesn't have to be just studying grammar and stuff like that. It doesn't have to be through reading. It doesn't have to be through listening. Just find some other way, as long as it's the right way for you. So keep experimenting Patty, keep trying. And remember, I guess this, remember that English is your language too, okay? English is open and it's for everyone. So this is your language too, and you have every right to learn it, to use it, and to speak it. So think of it as not as a foreign language. It's just another language, and it's yours too. Just like it belongs to everyone. You know, you can feel part of it as well.
I love that. Thanks so much for sharing. Okay, so let's wrap it up with the rapid fire questions. Okay, so the first one is, what is your favorite food from your country?
Pork pie. Do you know what a pork pie is?
Nope.
It's a pie with pork in it. But there's so much more to it than that. It's on paper, it's the most terrible thing in the world. It sounds disgusting. But when you actually eat it, oh, amazing, delicious. I won't tell you more. If you go to England, just buy a pork pie and get some English mustard and enjoy yourself.
I will. That sounds delicious. Okay, which tourist place would you recommend for someone interested in visiting your country?
Which tourist place? Warwick Castle. That's Warwick. It looks like it should be pronounced Warwick. Warwick. Warwick Castle. It's one of England's most magnificent medieval castles, and it's flipping brilliant. It's a huge castle with big turrets and battlements, and there's a lake, a moat that goes around it with swans on it. It's like the typical English medieval castle, and they have like demonstrations of guys on horses trying to kill each other in there and stuff. I mean, they're not really trying to kill each other, it's just a show, but it's really cool. So Warwick Castle is a fantastic place.
Amazing. What is your favorite hobby?
Playing the guitar at the moment. Actually, playing the bass guitar is my hobby at this time. So I bought a bass during the lockdown, and I've been playing along. So I plug it in to the computer so I can hear it, you know, and because it's electric, and go on YouTube and just find some songs that I love and just try and play along and try and learn the bass part. And I, you know, just repeat it again and again and again until I get it right. That's what I should be doing with my French. I should just be doing the same thing with French, just like repeating it until I get it right. But for some reason, it's the bass guitar that I'm prioritizing.
Okay, next one. Do you have favorite movie or series? If yes, which one?
Favorite movie or series?
Or you can be the last one that you have watched.
Okay, so actually I've been watching, I mean, I love superhero stuff. You know, I do like the Marvel superhero films and things like that. And recently I have been watching, I watched WandaVision and I watched Falcon and the Winter Soldier, the two Marvel series recently. But the thing I'm watching at the moment is called The Boys. I don't know if it's called that in every country, but it's really cool and it's really funny. It's basically a superhero story, but imagine a world in which there is a big corporation, a big company which employs the superheroes, and it's an evil corporation that does all sorts of naughty evil things, and it's a big marketing conglomerate and a social networking company, and it's a film studio, and they've basically used the superheroes as assets, intellectual property assets or whatever. Anyway, that's really interesting, and there's corruption involved. And imagine a world in which the superheroes are national heroes and they're movie stars and everything, and they are real superheroes, but they are really not nice people. And when you actually learn about them, you realize that they're really horrible. And the main superhero, the leader of all of them, is a complete psychopath. And it's just a really interesting, darker version of sort of superhero story where the superheroes are just horrible people.
Wow.
it's really interesting.
I like that. It's called The Boys.
The Boys.
Okay.
It's on Amazon. It's on Amazon Prime Video.
Mm-hmm. Amazing. I'm going to check that out. Thanks for sharing. Okay. Next one. Do you have a favorite song or band? Can I guess?
Okay. Go on then.
Beatles.
Yeah. It's so obvious, aren't I? I'm so obvious. Yeah. It is the Beatles. I'm obsessed by the Beatles.
It's amazing.
And yeah. I mean, you know, everyone knows about them. And like most people, they're so well known. And, you know, most people think, oh, the Beatles, oh, Yellow Submarine, Let It Be, Hey Jude. Yesterday, boring. But there's a lot more to it than that. And it's not just the music, it's the psychology of the four people involved and the extraordinary story of what happened to them. It never grows old. I love the story, I love all about it, and the music, of course. Yeah,
their music, it's really great, and you do mention them often on your podcast. That's why I know the answer. Okay, do you have a favorite book or author? If yes, which one? Or which is the last book you read?
Oy, the last book I read. I've got terrible reading habits. I pick up a book and start reading it, and then I get so relaxed that I fall asleep. I'm terrible at reading. I listen to audiobooks. So the latest one I heard was about the Beatles. Surprise, surprise. It was called 1, 2, 3, 4, The Beatles in Time by Craig Brown. And I listened to the audiobook version of that in order to then record an episode of the podcast about it. But my favorite book of all time is still Lord of the Rings. I know that's another obvious choice, but it's a book that I really like, and I love the world, the way that the natural world is described, the mountains, the forests, the fields, all the nature and stuff. And I find it very relaxing and calming. And I find the story also to be quite inspiring in a sort of, you know, grand hero's journey kind of a way. Yeah.
Amazing. I watched the movies and I loved the movies. I didn't get the chance to read the books, but
the films were okay. The first one is good. I'm not sure about that. They're good. All right, they're good. They're better than the Hobbit ones, which are bloody awful. But the Lord of the Rings films, yeah, not bad. I mean, considering how difficult it was to make them, I think they did a great job. But the books for me are way better. They're amazing.
Awesome. Last one. Could you share 3 phrasal verbs or idioms that you think people should know them?
Oh. Hold on. Well, there are so many. On my shelf, I've got the Cambridge Phrasal Verbs Dictionary. This will help. Let me just flick through and see if I can find something. Okay, look forward to, which is, again, an obvious one. I think that most people know it. Like, for example, I'm really looking forward to having a beer this evening, right? So I bought some beer earlier on. It's in the fridge. I'm looking forward to opening that first beer and having a drink. But the important thing to notice with look forward to is it's always look forward to and then an ing, right? So it's I am. That look forward to can be in any verb form. I am looking forward to, I look forward to, I will look, you know. Normally it's continuous. I am looking forward to opening a beer later. So to look forward to something, meaning, you know, when something is in the future and you're thinking about it and you're waiting for it and expecting it and you want it to happen. So I'm looking forward to opening my first beer this evening because it's Friday, listeners, viewers. Let's see, any others that grab my attention? Jazz. So I like jazz music. It's not just the Beatles. I like jazz. And here's a phrasal verb, to jazz something up. To jazz something up. To jazz something up would be to kind of make something a bit more interesting or a bit more exciting, right? For example, you know, like when I get pizza, if I order a pizza, sometimes I like to jazz it up by adding some like chilies on it. Red hot chili peppers. Yeah, when I get a pizza, I jazz it up by adding the red hot chili peppers on it. So Flea, Anthony, Chad, the other one, you know, no, not really. That's ridiculous. But you know what I'm trying to say. I'll jazz up the pizza by adding some spicy chili peppers. So jazz something up. Like you might jazz up an episode of your podcast by adding some music in it or something. And another one that just comes to mind is crack on, which is quite a nice phrase that I hear people using all the time in England. Crack on, it means continue and probably continue working. Like, okay, let's crack on then. Meaning let's continue working or let's get back to work. So let's crack on.
Awesome. There you go. Thank you for sharing. Last question. Where can people find you online?
Online, yeah. But I'm not going to tell people where they can find me in the real world because, you know, leave me alone. No,
Could you give us your address in Paris?
My actual address in Paris? No, I don't want people knocking on my door going, please, teacher, I need British accent, help me. You know, I don't want that. But online, yes. So probably the best place is just to go to my website, which is teacherluke.co.uk. Teacher, you know how to spell that, but Luke is L-U-K-E. Not luck, not look, not Mr. Luck, okay? Not Luke's with an apostrophe S. It's Luke. So Teacher Luke, L-U-K-E. .co.uk. That's how you find me online.
Awesome. I'm going to add in the description of the show notes so you guys can connect with Luke. So Luke, thank you so much for being here and for taking the time to record this interview with me. I had a blast talking with you. And yes, yeah. I can't thank you enough. Thank you so much.
Hey, you're welcome. And good luck with the podcast. Thanks for inviting me. It's always nice to be invited to things. And all the best for the future.
Awesome. So bye-bye and I'll see you around.
Okay. Cheers.
Hey guys, I hope you enjoyed this episode as much as I did. If you can, please share the podcast with your friends. Subscribe to the show so you can get notified when I release new episodes. And feel free to leave a review. I would love to read it. Now I have a message for you. Remember this, you don't have to be alone when learning a new language. You can find awesome communities to be part of. The number one reason why I was able to level up my English is because I decided to get out of my comfort zone and connect with language learners from all around the globe. So, if you have been struggling to improve your speaking skills, and if you can't find someone else to have a conversation, I want to encourage you to participate in our online encounters and to join our global community on Telegram. Since June of 2020, I've been organizing English speaking sessions on Zoom for us to hang out. In there, you can meet new people, make new friends, and practice English while having fun. If you can't use Telegram, don't worry. I always announce our encounters on social media, and you can always DM me so I can send you the link to our meetings. So that's it. Thank you so much for listening, and I'll see you in the next episode.